Hello and welcome to Startup Capital Season 2, Episode 1. I'm your Season 2 host, Lucas Lindsay. The following today is a pre-recorded conversation between me, Nick Farrell, Director of Communications at Cuddlesoft, and the amazing duo, Frank and Emily Valcarcel, founders of Cuddlesoft. In today's episode, we're going to take a look back at Season 1, and we're going to figure out, where's Tallahassee startup community headed? What was learned across a dozen different interviews of community leaders in Season 1? And what sort of things might be holding back the growth of the startup community here in Florida's capital city? Stay tuned.
You have a slight advantage when you're from Tallahassee.
I love Tallahassee.
We already have successes. We just have to continue to communicate the successes.
I love Tallahassee.
The old adage that the sum is greater than its parts, I think, could be more true for the city of Tallahassee.
I love Tallahassee.
I want it to be the change I wanted to see.
Obviously, we want to be the business capital of Florida.
I love Tallahassee.
I think millennials are really interested in business models that are both socially impactful as well as profitable.
I love Tallahassee.
I think, it takes government, private sector, and nonprofit sector, students like yourself, the startup community, all kind of pulling the rope in the same direction to get there.
I love Tallahassee.
I love Tallahassee. It's the startup capital.
Welcome to Season 2 of Startup Capital. This is the first episode of Season 2. I'm your host, Lucas Lindsay, Executive Director here at Domi Station. I'm joined today by three amazing people. Nick, Editor-in-Chief of Startup Capital, Communications Guru at Cuddlesoft, and then, of course, the wonderful founders of Cuddlesoft, Frank and Emily, here with me today. And we're going to discuss looking back on Season 1 of Startup Capital, what was going on there, what were they looking at trying to create with that series, how are they exploring the stories and the landscape of Tallahassee's growing startup community? What did we learn through that series? And then take a look ahead of what Season 2 is going to look like. We've got some exciting episodes planned, some great interviews with a number of influential people, entrepreneurs, those supporting entrepreneurs here in Florida's capital city.
All right, so I'll start us off. Like you said, there is a lot of activity happening in Tallahassee and a lot of growth around entrepreneurship, but it doesn't seem like there's a lot of knowledge of that or a lot of people talking about it outside of that circle. So one of our biggest goals was to tell the story and tell the stories of Tallahassee entrepreneurs and find those different perspectives of not only the business owners and the people who are starting the companies, but of some of the peripheral influencers, like you said, in our community who really have a big impact on a lot of that, and try to find out what needs to be done to kind of keep the momentum going and to figure out what's holding us back. And I think we did that in a number of interviews.
Yeah, so I mean, a lot of big moments stick out from the first season, but I'd love to, Frank, Emily, I mean, what was it that you guys were looking for when you kicked off Startup Capital?
The genesis of it was we just wanted to find a way to fill content for our blog, but it quickly steamrolled. We've gotten incredible feedback, really positive feedback from all corners of the community. And also through the process, I think the three of us, along with the readers, have learned a great deal and gotten a great education on the the climate of Tallahassee's entrepreneurial community.
Right. Well, I mean, the name's great, plays really well. I think what's interesting is that sometimes in Tallahassee you sort of get, just by virtue of being this capital of the state, right? You get this sort of de facto default leadership status. But what's cool about the series is that it's a more intentional look at who are, and on a merit-based, who are the leaders in this space, and making the case that we really truly are, based on work and output, trying to position ourselves as a leader across the state and region in startup and entrepreneurship. So I don't know, were there any big moments from Season 1 that stand out to you guys?
One that comes to mind immediately for me was our interview with Mark Powell, the founder of H-Wind. He just has an amazing story, even unrelated to Tallahassee, just his grit in building that company, but also looking at how he kind of moved through the ecosystem that we have and moving through all of these different resources such as the SBDC at FAMU, the Entrepreneurial Excellence Program, He really is a case study for using all of Tallahassee's resources to the max and building a successful company as a result.
Yeah, I think that a lot of it's interesting you bring that up, because a lot of times people, you know, they come to talk with me, you know, and we obviously we do all that work that we do to support entrepreneurs here at Domi. And people will ask, well, don't you feel competitive with programs like that? You know, why would someone do both programs? And so when you can hold up those examples of success, you know, I think it's great to have an example like that.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting to look at Mark's story and think about, you know, how he started, where he was working in government laboratories and was able to bring that to a local Tallahassee company. And he has such a vision for growing his company in Tallahassee and why Tallahassee is the right place for his company, and that he eventually wants to have, you know, his entire headquarters in Tallahassee and be able to centralize in this local community because of all of the great things that it has to offer.
And Mark's, you know, Mark was only one of many people who spoke about the resources that Tallahassee empowered him with. You know, there's a lot of the interviews that connected dots back to Keith Bowers and the SBDC. And Mark is not unique in that aspect. So I think his story was really powerful because Emily's right. It showed the grit and determination that he had. I think he had some of the most quotable statements, to be honest. But really, he gave credit where credit was due. And he said, you know, without these pillars or these areas that I could go to and get help, without Domi Station, without the SBDC, you know, I wouldn't have gotten as far as I could have on my own.
Yeah. So do you think that, I mean, so you have someone like SBDC, right? I mean, that's been a longstanding resource and they've always been there and they're going to be there. You know, from the entrepreneur's perspective, you know, do you guys see differences, advantages to different programs and how that pieces together into a pipeline or a sort of an ecosystem of resources?
Absolutely. You know, the one that stands out for me right now is certainly the Get Started program. I think what that is doing to just help folks that are at the early stages of their idea or of their venture, they're just coming out of their, you know, shell of comfort and security of a day-to-day job and thinking about taking that entrepreneurial leap and becoming business owners themselves. Get Started program really gives them the platform and gives them like the first like group, right? That cohort probably becomes like a support group for them as they journey through it. Emily, you have another one?
Not necessarily a specific one, but I just wanted to say that I think that there are a lot of different programs that are offered and they can kind of each play their own part in a different way. And you can see how different programs fall on someone's timeline. So for example, somebody who is super new and just has an idea and really needs to dive into the practicality of what their business is would go to a program like the Get Started program, or you could go to the Entrepreneurial Excellence program where you're learning maybe a bit more practicality of running a business or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because you really have to streamline what you're doing and how you do it. And those are two very different things.
It's definitely something that community at large, like you said, has several different offerings for helping people in specific areas.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, one thing that I've kind of noticed is a trend. It's not just here, but it's elsewhere too. You have longstanding programs and they're really good at focusing on like nuts and bolts business stuff, whether it's just putting together the business plan, thinking through lending and acquiring capital and how you're going to deploy that capital, and almost like a business school kind of approach, like an MBA kind of approach. And then you have, it seems like a lot of the newer programs, while still focused on, you know, all business fundamentals, they use some new tools and methodologies like the Canvas and all that. But it seems like, too, the differentiating factor is something that you touched on, Frank, which is that they have a cohort-based, familial type of aspect to them where they're as much focused on building a culture around entrepreneurship and connecting, you know, people to each other as they are on each company's individual, you know, strategic plan, business model, that sort of thing. So I think that that's like one aspect that, you know, culture and those kinds of things get talked about a lot in season one, like the changing culture, breaking down the silos, being more collaborative. I think those programs kind of reflect that, I guess, in some ways. So, And I don't know if there were stories along that line that stood out to you from season one, but it seemed like time and time again, people kept talking about, you know, like Dustin Daniels in his interview talked about everybody's pulling the rope in the same direction now. That seems to be reflected in the type of programming that we're seeing.
Yeah, that, you know, one of the definite themes that kind of happened organically was the talks of breaking down the silos, you know, improving inclusivity. And I think Dustin talked about that. I think he articulated it probably the best.
Yeah, I mean, his interview was, it was pretty strong, right? So what's funny about his interview is he hit on both one of the biggest strengths that we all talk about and perceive, which is this new era of collaboration across organizations, and can always be improved. Obviously, there's tons of ways we can make that better. But that seemed to be one strength he hit on. And then at the same time, he hit on what I think is sort of this underlying, the biggest weakness that sometimes gets glossed over in things. And what I appreciated about, you know, the series is that, you know, we started to uncover as much the strengths as and some of the weaknesses. In his opinion, that the opportunity to participate in this environment is not evenly distributed. So he talked about how, you know, talent and people are more evenly distributed across the city than the opportunity to participate is, or the necessary skills are, or the you know, financial capital to participate, not evenly distributed. I think that seems like a big challenge for our community. I mean, we all know that there are places that historically have not had access to opportunity. So
I'll put you on the spot a little bit, partially because, you know, you're the host of the series for this season, but also because, you know, from your position as executive director of Dome Station, I think you have a better vantage point of this issue. So how do you see a solution coming about? What are there any current movements, or is there any discussions that you're having with some of these, you know, I guess these other sections of the community, whether it be the chamber or whether it be one of the educational institutions? Where's the change coming from?
Right. So one is that the groups are starting, different groups across town are starting to work with each other more, which is a positive development. So you have like a Florida State and a FAMU, you know, even if they're not directly collaborating on startup stuff, they are through the intermediary of both working with Domi, right? So that this place becomes a mixing point for those communities, those campuses, and things sort of organically evolve from there. But in terms of being very intentional about it, with all of our programming, I mean, we're dead focused on building the most diverse startup community in the Southeast, kind of like turning the stereotype of the South on its head. And through the, if you look at the demographics of Tallahassee, I mean, we have that opportunity. The underlying population is a diverse population. So if we can just build a community that, a startup community that looks like our city, we'd be miles ahead of many, many other communities. And so the opportunities there, I think you have to intentionally recruit for programs, even hand recruit sometimes at this point, to ensure that you get an inclusive and diverse set of people. And that's not just, you know, race, ethnicity, but that's gender, that's age, income, backgrounds, like professionally. So, you know, I think our fall Get Started cohort was a great group of people, and they sort of looked the same way our city looked as well. And then the other thing that is aspirational at this point, but there's a lot of conversation, and Dustin and the city and them have been a part of this conversation, but through the Tech Hire initiative, but it's around workforce development and training programs that provide access to communities that have not historically had access to, you know, more technical skills, and doing that through non-traditional education like code boot camps, workshops, not necessarily four-year degrees, but maybe more workforce-based stuff like the things that Tallahassee Community College delivers, or things that through partnerships, you know, we could bring about, like a Code Academy or Code Camp.
And Lucas, you touched on code education, and that's a great segue into what I'm talking about here, which is I was reading our interview with Matt O'Hagan and Christian Pelez Espinosa, who are kind of some of the founders of Hack FSU and this new student group, Florida Hackers, which is a statewide student group around technology and computer science. And one of the biggest things that they touched on in their interview was The fact that computer science degrees from many universities aren't necessarily keeping up with the workforce. So the question that I want to field to you guys, Frank and Emily, because you're both products of the computer science school at FSU, is what needs to be changed to make these programs more reflective of real life work?
Sure. I have opinions about this for sure. I don't know if it's the computer science programs as a whole are kind of falling behind. I think it's difficult sometimes. I think if we interviewed, Dr. Robert Van Engelen, who's an incredible proponent of, entrepreneurship in Tallahassee. I mean, he single-handedly helps people get started or seeds them so that they can build their companies. But he might tell you that it's difficult for the school, like the curriculum of the school, to separate fully from the theoretical knowledge that they're trying to teach you. And I think that's sort of the issue these days, is that the barriers, the resistance to building things has gotten really low. So being able to put up a website that integrates data from, very significant sources is easy. There's no like monetary barrier. There's the technologies are really affordable at this point, but the schools don't teach you like those hard skills. The schools are teaching you, the things that are driving that in the blur behind it, right? The algorithms or the data structures involved. Emily can probably attest to this as well, but going through that program, like, it's hard to see where there's time to start fitting in things that are more practical, like mobile and web app development. The ways where I think they can help, right? I know I went off on a tangent, but the ways where I think they can help is, instead of trying to inject some of that stuff into the curriculum, is help out groups like Hack FSU or Florida Hackers. Put some momentum behind it. Put some sponsorship behind it. Or offer some, class credit for competing in a hackathon or a similar event and placing well.
That's exactly what I was going to ask you, is if, there are alternative ways, and maybe this, the problem that emerged and the problem that someone like Technol Hack FSU is solving is this, that is the best format for engaging with the other skill sets, even simple stuff like using GitHub and hacking on projects. Like, maybe you do it on the weekends now. I was just going to kick that question to you, but it sounds like, you think that that's the case. So.
Well, let's kick it to Emily. I think she's got something to say.
So I think that it's really important to have these conversations. And so the way I kind of look at it is that groups like Florida Hackers or any of the various hackathons that exist in and around our community, I think those are kind of a top-down way to get people involved, right? It's a way to get people excited about coding. It's a way for people to learn. It's a way for somebody to walk in the door having absolutely no skills and leave 2 to 3 days later and feel like they've been part of a community and that they've also learned something and that they can now go home and start a project on a weekend and know what HTML is and CSS is and know a little bit of JavaScript and be able to start something.
Yeah, it definitely empowers them. I honestly, to commend the work that Matt and Christian and their predecessors have done, those guys have built an incredibly inclusive community. Mm-hmm. They're very diverse. They were almost deliberate in that being part of their mission. But if they're ever listening to this, guys, we have all been very impressed by what you've been able to do and how inclusive and diverse that community really is.
Mm-hmm. Part two of this was that I think that I look at the university systems as more of like a bottom-up approach where you walk in the door and you learn C or Java and you're dealing with seg faults and you're building your own data structures and they make you learn all the theory behind it. And for some people, that's what works. Like for me, that's one of the things that I'm still really passionate about. One of the most unpopular classes is theory of computation, and that was my favorite class.
No, you're just showing off.
No, I'm not, but I'm serious. Like, I still have this desire to go out and do stuff like work on compilers or language development, which would have been really hard for me to get into had I not had this super strong foundation that I learned from my university system. But I do think it's really important to start a marriage between the two and to find more of a middle ground. So for not only for universities to start, have a really awesome web development class, like teach people how to do these things, teach people how to use GitHub.
Or just have a cohort, like just have a group that meets, you know, of undergrad students. There's this wonderful place in the basement of the Love Building called the Majors Lab. And it's where a lot of the computer science students go to be able to use a machine that's either connected to or powerful enough to compile their problem sets. And, you know, it's really a meeting place. It's sort of like an event room. It's all kinds of things for the CS majors. And, like, the CS department wouldn't take very much effort, and they can delegate it to some of the student organizations, too. It wouldn't take a lot of effort for them to kind of empower, like, these small cohorts of people to just start meeting once a week and start building on skills or start, you know, it's incredible when you get a room full of people that are like-minded, creative, and excited about something, and you do that a few times, those iterations of them meeting, like where they end up it's powerful stuff, but you got to spark it. And I think that's where the department, I'm not trying to single out FSU CS department.
No, of course not. I think what you're saying is it's very similar to what we were talking earlier about the business support programs. It's that, you know, what we've all come to realize is you have to build the community and culture.
Yeah.
And that, you know, groups like Technol stepped up to do that. And obviously we still need traditional, you know, CS hardcore education. That's a foundation. It's 100% necessary.
Absolutely.
You know, to make big things. But maybe you have to supplement that with the community building and culture building side too, which I think, you know, these people have started to figure out.
Yeah, you know, they need to figure it out. I personally feel like it's part of their responsibility. The school's curriculum, and again, I'm saying school, but I'm generalizing. I'm not singling out FSU CS department. I actually feel like some of the classes in there gave us very hard skills that were applicable to the industry today. But I know that there's some schools that teach purely theoretical concepts, and there's not a lot of areas where, like, to use the analogy, where the rubber meets the road. So, I don't think the solution is for them to start injecting new curriculum, because that's hard to keep up with. Industry is constantly changing. But they could get behind groups that are, you know, groups like Technol or HackFSU, and be supportive of them and be part of them and help them do it.
The other big thing that came up in that interview was culture. And you guys touched on this about how they're creating a really amazing culture centered around diversity and innovation. And I just want to ask you guys, what are some of the pillars of Cuddlesoft's culture?
I think a lot of
this might be a hard one.
On what we talked about. Yeah, we're very dedicated to learning. We're very dedicated to taking people who don't necessarily have this real world experience building software or anything like that.
Consulting, servicing clients.
Yeah.
Like that.
I mean, even people who don't have experience in our specific web technologies that we use, we've hired students who are part of this computer science department. We've hired people who are completely self-taught. And I think that it's really important to maintain our own internal community, of learning and of continue to diversify our skill sets and to really allow people to know from A to Z exactly how our company works, how our software works, why we do what we do. Yeah, I think learning is definitely one of the biggest pillars.
Yeah, learning, a lot of the culture at Cuddlesoft, I think, circulates around learning.
It also seems like you're very inclusive in that, right? It seems like you're willing, like whether you come from psychology or CS, you know, you have a seat at the table.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And giving people the confidence to also teach others. So I think it is really important. We've hosted a few workshops in the past.
That's right.
Yeah. Where we can then disseminate the things that we've learned and the things that we feel strongly about and passionately about, that we can actually disseminate that information to other parts of our technical community and to give people the confidence to speak intelligently in front of people.
Yeah, because you almost hit, like, you know, the next level of mastery on a subject when you're able to teach that subject, you know. When you're kind of isolated, learning it by yourself, iterating through it, you know, you kind of don't have a metric or a gauge for your command of that subject. Like, you know, but like if you're the only one there in a room trying to learn Python and you spend a year just becoming a better Python developer, how well can you gauge your knowledge from, you know, day zero to day 366? It's difficult. But when you stand in front of a room of 30 people and you realize that an hour and a half went by and you explained everything beautifully, any question that got thrown at you, you had the right answer for, you walk out of a situation like that and you're like, wow, I'm a decent Python developer after all. And now I have 30 other people in this room who are hopefully inspired and taught something, imparted some of the knowledge that I've been able to acquire or accumulate. It's a cool feeling.
Right. But it's, you know, I love this idea about thinking differently about who is included, regardless of their background, right?
Yeah.
Like they come from psychology, they come from wherever. They can, through learning and through, you know, continuous curiosity and being empowered by those resources, they can become a part of this community. And it seems like that's a theme for, maybe that's a way to tackle the problem of diversity and inclusion and getting people at the table. And it seems like the theme of expanding the definition of who is included is kind of shown through in the first season. And in particular, I'm thinking about Jessica Lowe Miner's interview, where, you know, you guys took, there's not many startup interview series that would have touched on or spoken with the nonprofit community. But again, that's just this thing of expanding the definition of who's included and that we have something to learn from all these people. So, you know, that interview, like, in the ways the nonprofits think different, that really stands out, I think, in that regard, too.
Well, I got to say, it's really hard to ignore the nonprofit sector in Tallahassee. You know, kind of paraphrasing directly from Jessica's interview, that there's 2,000 and there's almost 2,100 registered nonprofits in Leon County. You know, and she mentioned that 21%, I think, of Leon County's GDP is generated by those nonprofits. That's really significant. I mean, that's really significant. Nick, what was it? Was it like $3 billion a year?
It was certainly nothing to sneeze at. And that interview was really interesting to me because she did talk about the ways that nonprofits are kind of becoming more entrepreneurial in their operations and finding new ways to kind of act like a business in order to further their missions.
That's right.
And on the other hand, businesses are beginning to learn more from the nonprofit sector and about how they can impact their local community or the nation as on a lot of these social issues. And I think that she hit the nail on the head. There's a huge chance for businesses in the next coming decades to kind of transform the way that business is done as far as, like she said, these negative externalities.
Yeah, you know, I think at the core of most nonprofit missions is some social entrepreneurship initiative, right? You know, some cause, something that they're trying to improve or some impact that they're trying to make. And applying the entrepreneurial mentality, you know, you can start to optimize that strategy and increase that impact.
So season one of Startup Capital, I was outside looking in, but I was always impressed by, one, the breadth of the community that you looked at, right? And quality, and you really got at some deeper issues. And the fact that you're able to create a series that even spurs this kind of discussion. Now we, you know, you've done this great overview of what's here in the community and things that have happened to date. And we're a community that's kind of standing on the precipice, looking at the future. There's a lot of potential, a lot of things ahead. And I think everybody's asking where we go from here. So in that same way, we've got season two coming up. Where we go from here? What are we going to do to explore? What do you guys want to see, you know, as we explore some of these themes that were discussed? And different aspects of, you know, Tallahassee startup community.
So one thing that we touched on a lot today was inclusion and different perspectives having a lot of value. And I think that's one thing that we've already been focusing on for season two is to try to even further expand the circle of perspectives that we're looking at and that the people that we're interviewing, because I think the more diverse in perspective and mindset that you can find, I think just the more knowledge that you'll gain from that. And I've had so much fun talking with all these different people from the community that I never would have met or even known about. And I'm just really looking forward to continuing to do that and see what's out there in the city.
Because it's not just the answers, or it's not just the individuals that we're interviewing. It's the person that's coming up with those questions, the experiences that influence them to kind of dig deeper into some of the topics that, you know, we really need to be exposing. We really need to be bubbling up. That's really going to change, I think, for the better. I think there's value in having both sides of that conversation. There's value in having them come from different places of the community.
Yeah. We're also diversifying our medium. Adding a podcast component to this, I think, adds another, you know, a little bit more in-depth human interaction and actually getting to hear these people speak, I think is going to have a bigger impact than reading the words on the paper. You know, hearing it literally in somebody's own voice, I think is going to add to our perspective on it.
Absolutely. And to that point, Nick, how about a little tease for what's coming next month?
Yes. So next month we have quite possibly the most notable guest that we've had so far. I won't reveal who it is, but this will be a video interview with our special guest, Ann Lucas Lindsay. And we're excited to release that. Lucas, did you have any comments?
I had a great time. Season 2, Episode 2. Don't miss it. It's going to be awesome. Learned quite a bit about what's going on locally in ways that some of our most powerful institutions in town are looking to empower startups and entrepreneurs here in the startup capital. Season 2, I'm really excited that you guys have made the decision to diversify the medium that we're delivering it, diversify the people that we're reaching out to, and the organizations that are involved. So thank you to you guys very much. Thank you to the city of Tallahassee, our home and home to many, many ambitious entrepreneurs. It's awesome, the stories that are being told through Startup Capital. We're going to double down on that here in season 2, push it even further as the community grows. So thank you all.
This has been a recording brought to you by Cuddlesoft, the idea-driven developers. For more on Tallahassee's startup community, the business of technology, and the latest in software development, visit www.cuddlesoft.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in next time for the next edition of the Startup Capital Podcast.